your touch. You're the reason I believe in love. It's been difficult for me to trust, and I'm afraid that I'ma fuck it up. Ain't no way that I can leave you stranded, 'cause you ain't never left me empty-handed. And you know that I know that I can't live without you, so baby stay.
Chapter 2. Roy doesn't see Chris very often. It's only practical, what with their respective lives. And their relationship has always been defined by practicalities. Roy's parents died. Chris was the only next of kin. She couldn't leave him at home, so she took him to work with her. He had to get educated and not be a liability when the business began to expand, so she never got around to finalizing the adoption papers and shipped him off to boarding school. He had to understand the realities of their situation, so she always spoke frankly to him, like a business partner. The little business of just the two of them. She expected him to keep up. But it's not like Chris doesn't love him. She brought home a cat when Diane joined them. She sent him booze, cigarettes, and apple candy when he was at the academy, because she knew what he'd need to bribe people with and what he would be missing. She didn't say much when he told her he couldn't tend bar or wait tables the next summer because he'd found an alchemy master and he'd be living there when school was off. She didn't say much when he came back from Ishval either. But crates of apples arrived biweekly at his townhouse in East, and she made sure someone was always with him anytime he so much as laid eyes on alcohol those first 6 months. Above all, the Mustangs are functioning drunks. And she'll let him put a toe in the slush money now, buy debts and pay bribes and continue accessing her network. They communicate by phone, by notes, by Diane relaying annoyed little messages, by the various little tidbits passed along by Vanessa and Sear and Maddie and Bronca and Katerin. But Roy hasn't seen Chris since the spring equinox. And while she's absolutely going to get the bulletin from Gracia sooner rather than later, if he brings the news in person, he might get ridiculed a little less. And he does want to talk to her. Chris is good with people, reading them and rearranging them, body and mind. And he wants to get his upcoming discussion with Ed right. Roy's also supposed to be good with people, however. It's truly lucky he went to Mace and Risa first, he thinks. Not without mentally awarding himself another hour in the dunce cap. He doesn't know the details. He was too young at the time. But he's aware that his arrival in Chris's life spurred quite a few business decisions. Or rather, just the decision that laid all others, which was to have a business. Going from employee to employer is no easy trick, especially in her industry, as no manager loves it when their workforce tries to supplant them, but pimps especially tend to hold views, and Chris did not defend or advance herself bloodlessly. There's little of that now, but, well, bad enough he insulted Risa and Mace. If Roy came whining to Chris about how unworthy are those who've gotten their hands dirty, he would quite possibly implode from the resulting weight of hypocrisy, not to mention her silent disappointment. She loves him. He's never doubted that, right from the very beginning, and never contested it. And he wasn't ashamed when he was older and agreeing to estrange each other. At that point, more for his career than hers. He just knew, as she'd taught him, that sometimes to maximize your odds, you have to run a little rough. He always accepted it. He loves her, too. Chris splits her time between an old quarter apartment in the lower third and now a bungalow down in South for winters, which Roy increasingly feels the wisdom of as his own joints continue the steady nonsense of aging. Between Diane and Sear as the facemen of the business, Chris continues to quietly manage a few clubs, one or two nights a week. The same familiar old Madam Christmas, just an old lady who likes to listen. She doesn't deal with even a fraction of the assassination attempts Roy does. The end of his workday is the start of hers, But it's a Tuesday, and the downtown bar is high-end enough that it won't stand out too much for Roy to go there. It's all new girls in the entry lounge, but they know enough to go get Lesso, who fetches Vlada. This establishment doesn't do dinner, so it's not busy, just gone 7. The faint music from the main room still jazzy and light. Roy's still glad to wait in the staff hallway off the anteroom, uniform jacket folded over his arm, in no mood to chance seeing anyone who might recognize him. Anyone from work, that is. Lesso's clearly spread the word, because first Dion, then Samira, both pop their heads into the hall to wave and grin like pumpkins, falling back dramatically and squealing when Vlada chases them back inside. Vlada is the latest of Chris's assistants, and would be the type to tousle Roy's hair and pinch his cheek if she were 10 years older than him. As it is, she's still in her 20s, so she collides breasts first with his arm. Instead, the grin that comes with her hug unabashedly delighted to leave glitter all down his front. She ushers him to a private room, running off Samira and Dion once again. They're both staff now, no longer contract girls, and he's taken them both out when he's had need of a plus one in the past couple of years. He'd gotten a lot wrong in his conversation with Ed, but assuming he'd wanted more just because they'd spent some dates together, that he doesn't think he can be blamed for. People who go out with Roy tend to want a repeat, even if it's not real. It's how most people even manage to like Roy in the first place, given who he is and what he does in his professional life. But of course, Ed met him through work, got the most sparkling first impression Roy has in his arsenal, short of a gloved hand snapped in his face. The kid loves monsters, sure, but, well, everybody's hit me, Mustang. If Roy wants to call himself Ed's friend, he's going to have a talk with him about that, too. Dayan and Samira fight one last giggling wave past Vlada. Roy doesn't let his smile change for them, wiggling his fingers back, and Chris joins him a moment later.
Thanks, V, she says,
and Vlada playfully salutes them and shuts the door behind her. So, Chris says, settling down on one of the couches and nodding at the private bar. Roy obediently gets up to make her a drink.
What's dyed up your chimney?
Well, I've managed to insult all my friends this week, Roy says lightly, fishing out a glass.
And it's only Tuesday.
You did say you're making government more efficient.
That makes him smile briefly.
No trouble with Merrick, I hope.
Chris shrugs.
Vanessa's happy. They've got 2 properties she's been wanting to overhaul for years, and they wouldn't sell.
She taps out a cigarette, holding it expectantly until he makes a face and puts down the cognac to tug on a glove.
How's shop?
Roy hesitates, just a beat too long, and Chris waves him off.
How are you?
No.
Roy says, snapping her cigarette alight.
I can talk about work. Work is lovely. I adjust the height of my chair 6 times a day, because even Sven hasn't been able to fix what's off with my rotator cuff, and I'm about to overhaul the entire canon of contract regulations just to make it easier to fire people. Garnish?
Why not? Chris says, watching him flip the glass.
All that and you're making your friends lucky to know you this week.
Oh, yes, Roy agrees, taking the moment to give the mixer a shake. Though Mason Riza didn't let it stand for long.
So it's not what you're here for, Chris diagnoses, watching him pour. Is it?
Well, it's not like Roy imagines Chris hasn't noticed that he's only measured out for 1 drink here, not 2.
Not quite, he admits,
figuring he may as well go straight into it.
A friend told me they have feelings for me, and I'm not sure where to go from here.
Chris just looks at him for a long moment, with the same uninspired face she always got when Roy brought her some spelling test or broken plate like it was a real problem.
What, is she ugly?
No, he's not, Roy says, willing himself to get control of this new and entirely unwelcome crop of micropauses. Chris's face settles further into skepticism.
Mace? What? It's not. I have more than two friends,
Roy defends, ignoring how he can just see mental versions of Havoc and Breida shaking their heads in tandem.
You have subordinates, Chris overrules. This is why you need more people in your life. Who's this friend that you don't know how to say no to?
Roy feels his face trying to slide into a scowl straight out of second grade and forbids it, setting the finished sidecar down in front of her and retaking his seat.
Younger, he decides,
because if Chris doesn't already know it's Ed who he's having issues with, then maybe he can get away with not saying so. He should know how to talk down a 24-year-old he's known for 10 years.
We work together on occasion, and I did say no, or rather, it's not as though he propositioned me. He just made his feelings known. And Mace and Risa think I should go for it.
He exhales, briefly working his jaw to loosen the day's tension headache.
I'm not so sure it's a good idea.
Chris looks like she's thinking about raising an eyebrow.
What, this your first time getting a love note? Need your hand held on how to let him down sweet?
Roy gives her a sour look.
He's going to find it insulting if I sugar him, and I can't afford to alienate him. What, this the Arugan ambassador's kid or something?
Chris narrows her eyes slightly.
If you're here because you need damage funds, what'd you do? Tell the poor kid to go kick rocks? Roy, you know better than that.
He is not. I didn't. He's Amstrian. The foreigners all think I drink blood even more than our tabloids do. Roy rubs his face and lets himself sink further back into the velvet couch, his boots sliding slightly on the plush carpet, shins bumping against the low table as his posture gives up the ghost, in the face of the familiar lushness of his aunt's space.
It's just, he's felt this way for a long time, and I never noticed, and I can't afford not to notice, and I don't. So you're not letting him down,
Chris says, which is so simultaneously true and false that it clicks Roy's jaw shut like a shorted signal.
If you're not saying no, then it sounds like you're thinking about saying yes. No?
Roy drops his head back on the couch, glaring up at the ceiling.
It's not that simple. You think so? I think it needs some thought, yes,
Roy says tartly.
Try thinking faster, Chris advises. 40 is what we in the industry call settling times, kiddo. If you're thinking partnership, you're lucky you even have suitors, let alone that it's coming from a friend. I'm 38,
Roy mutters.
Not for long, Chris says unconcernedly. Who is this kid anyway?
Roy gives in.
It's Edward. Elric.
There's a long pause.
You're telling me, Chris says, that the darling of Amstris, the Full Metal Alchemist, a popular, young, trustworthy alchemist, the one you've had at your back all summer, that little powerhouse, wants you bad and you're waffling?
She blows smoke in his face.
Why are you still here? Go airbrush some abs on and show the kid what it means to ride a Mustang. Auntie, well, when's the last time you got waxed?
Chris says disinterestedly.
You haven't got the jeans for full coverage, and no one likes a patchy chest. Fix your eyebrows, too, and get a haircut. Auntie, please take this seriously. I am. If this doesn't work out, probably no one will die, and that's a better guarantee than you'll get with most anyone else.
Chris purses her lips around the cigarette.
The kid worked hard for you, Roy. If you're not going to make yourself happy, you may as well give him what he wants. That's not...
Roy starts. But there's nowhere for that sentence to go. It's not about happy, isn't it?
It's not that there's...
a happiness I'm setting aside if I pursue this.
My point? Chris takes another drag. If you say no to this, it's not going to be in favor of something better.
I'm not going to court Ed just because there's nothing better on offer.
That wouldn't be fair to Ed.
Beyond unfair. You know that's not what I'm saying. Doubt that's what Mace and Risa said either.
Chris ashes her cigarette, acrylic nails glinting briefly in the low light.
You used to get all excited about it, you know? Reading all those novels, asked me what you thought you should name your kids.
Roy closes his eyes.
Chris, I'm just saying.
There's a faint clink as she takes a sip of her drink.
You wanted to get married.
I was 7.
Well, what do you want now? Because you can't stay between yes and no, especially if you don't want him insulted. And he knows you? Best be honest, then.
What does Roy want? It's not a question that matters often. At least, not in the way she's asking. In fact, it doesn't matter because it's all that matters. What Roy wants is the sole way forward, the only way out. Romance isn't something that factored much into it. And how could it? With who? And yet, there was Risa. Ev. That bartender he'd slept with a few times all the way back in East. It wasn't like any of it was planned. But life is what happens while you're busy making plans. Ed, who often seems to exist specifically to spite every concept of plans. Ed, who keeps a mind like a meteorite strike in a face like a toasted marshmallow, whose every expression cartoons itself across his body, who has such precise physical control and spatial awareness, and yet manages to have absolutely no sense of his actual size. How even with a body like a gilded cinder block, he'll sit like a fairy perching on a tulip. The shockingly feminine way he'll occasionally toss his hair over one thickly muscled shoulder. How he once spent 12 solid minutes trying to balance a piece of cucumber on Chowder's nose. And he usually goes around with an expression that varies between ambiently homicidal and recently concussed. But there's a smile Roy's seen on his face a few times, usually around Al, that makes him hard to look at. It's a look that has no conception of its own vulnerability, because it's so happy, so freely devoted, so ready to give and be given over. This is yours beyond reason. It had never once been for Roy, but all of a sudden now yawning beneath him is the possibility that it could be. But could is not should. He might have loved us, but he wasn't any good at it. Ed's had his fill of men who don't love well. And there's part of Roy that always needs to win, to erase any black mark, that burns with indignance at such a brand. But he's going to have to apologize to Ed anyway, and that, Roy can admit, is no place for his pride. But his pride isn't easily suppressed. Especially not when it's carried him this far. Carried him straight into this. His life is in debt, but that's not why he's putting conditions on no. In his love life, and in doing so, automatically creating conditions for yes. For someone to know him, to be worth him. Because he's not going to accept anything less. Because he's smart, he's beautiful, he's the top of his class, he's a prodigy, he's unstoppable, he's a monster, he's a god of war, he's going to break this country over his knee and recast the pieces. Because he's always thought so, and Ishval didn't change the core of that, only built upon it, only turned it into an excuse. Roy knows he is not a good man. Some disobeyed the order to raise Ishval, to kill civilians. He didn't. Some were broken afterward by what they did. He wasn't. Certainly something of him died at war, but nothing that hadn't deserved to. Fine, he'd thought. If he is damned, then let him be terrible. Let there be none who can stand against him, countermand him, deny him his will. Let him not rest until he is the last worst thing in this country. But that was 15 years ago. He is what he's made himself now, a fundamental part of the establishment whose reform has become his life's work, a council member and a general, the minister of war. There is worth in him, and he puts it to work. There are plenty of goals yet to meet, certainly, work never ending. But he is well down his path, firm in his footing. There isn't much left that can stop him now. That's why people keep trying to kill him. If he is already a bad man, if there's worth in him still, then why shouldn't he have what he wants? What does Ed want? He hadn't pursued Roy, but he thought Roy had precluded that, had known about his interest. He thinks about the breadth of Ed's shoulders, the cowlick flyaway combat zone of his hair. He thinks about touching Ed's mouth. And being allowed to touch Ed's mouth. He thinks about the most terrifying talent of a generation looking up at him. Ed with his cut-up cheek and red, wet eyes. Not a single positive expectation anywhere in his face. He doesn't want Ed to look at him like that. He doesn't want Ed to have cause. He rubs a hand over his mouth.
I don't think it'll work, even if I do go to him. I may have precluded that.
Chris eyeballs him.
Tell me.
He tells her. Chris looks at him for a while.
You know, she says thoughtfully, if Di came and told us how her man took her crying from the hospital and put her to bed alone to drink herself to sleep, you'd put his head on a pike.
Roy winces.
It was non-alcoholic. Roy... I know. So who's left that can put your head on a pike?
Chris says rhetorically, taking another sip of the cigarette.
Who's your boy got?
That's not rhetorical.
His brother, his mechanic, her surgeon grandmother, his teacher, her husband. They've a butcher shop in Dublin. She's a combat alchemist who can do much of what he does, but she's got health issues and no particular ambitions. Though there is also the Emperor of Jing, though in a somewhat limited capacity.
Wow, Chris says prosaically.
The rest all tied up in his being full metal?
Not necessarily, Roy admits. People tend to pull around him no matter what he's doing. It's just right now he's not doing much.
What's he want?
That's harder to answer, which is another critical intelligence failure on Roy's part.
He currently works with the civilian engineering alchemists, but he's bored.
How bored?
Roy rubs his temples.
Fist-fighting police precincts.
Several of Ed's more colorful comments about the mob also surface in recent memory. He hasn't said anything about horrors, at least, despite occasionally making the kind of comment that indicates he needs to spend more time with meaner women.
He also doesn't know about you.
Bring him around, Chris decides. If you won't make your suit, we will.
He won't just hop on, Roy warns.
Which is true, even though he can feel it coming from an even more embarrassingly second-grade emotion. My people, my toys.
Either you're doing something he endorses or he's out. Money's not enough.
Chris raises her eyebrows, amused.
Then you'd better make a good offer, hadn't you?
Auntie?
Well, you want to stay in the kid's life. Make yourself worth it, Chris advises. Abs or no abs, that's how you got him in the first place. Give him what he can't get anywhere else.
Roy rubs his palm over his mouth. Chris isn't wrong, and Mace wasn't either. Ed has already begun to turn outwards, fitfully shrugging off mundanity like a too small coat. He's never going to react to things like the average person. The arrest and the incident at the embassy both prove that. And if he doesn't channel it the right way, it's only going to cause further problems. primarily for him. But at the same time, what Roy just told Chris holds true for this, too. Without something he wants, Ed's not going to blindly strive for status, for money, for power. If he truly does want to return as Full Metal, it'll be because he's reaching for leverage. It'll be because he's found a world he wants to move. And it'll be Roy he reaches for then, because Roy's made himself Ed's avenue of access for state power. But Roy doesn't want to just sit and rely on eventuality. He wants Ed to turn to him because he trusts Roy to deliver, to be the kind of ally that returns every investment twofold, not because he has no other choice. He wants Ed to turn to him when he doesn't want power. He wants Ed to pick at his alchemy and poke at his policy and pour strawberries onto his counter, share a drink with him under the afternoon sun.
"You've been lucky, kid," Chris says, watching him. "Very lucky. That's good because you need it. Need it more for what you're doing, what you're gonna do."
She lets the final drag eat up the last millimeter of her cigarette, meditative, then stubs it out.
"You don't keep luck by turning away gold when it falls into your hands."
Roy exhales, rolling his neck as he sits forward.
"I know. Know what you're gonna do?"
Roy picks up Chris's glass, toasts her with it, and drains the last of her sidecar.
"Stay lucky."
The end.
Even when I knew I never could, know that I can't find nobody else as good as you. I need you to stay, need you to stay, yeah. I do the same thing I told you that I never would. I told you I'd change, even when I knew I never could, know that I can't find nobody else as good as you. I need you to stay, need you to stay, yeah. I need you to stay.
The music used in this podfic is Stay by The Kid, Leroy, and Justin Bieber. If you enjoyed this podfic, you can leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofouron.org/users/opalsong. From there, you can find a link to the podfic post, and from there, you can find a link to the text post. Thanks for listening!